The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Claypo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I am Dr. Josh Claypo, and today we are talking about becoming that shooting star. That thing, that entity that everybody wants to be. I want to be the ultimate leader. By the way, Alex, I was just going to say, you know how I love to pick music? I'm going to disclose something to you. Obviously, I was looking at rock and classic rock songs, but I have to share this with you. You know what came to my mind first?
Styx, undoubtedly.
No, it's even worse. This is even worse than that. Okay, I'm going to say it. Dan Fogelberg.
Leader
of the band. It just can't, I don't know what it is. It was there. And then it got stuck in my head. And then I had to spend at least 25, 30 minutes trying to not just find, there's great songs about becoming a leader, but it got stuck. So I wanted to share that with you. Even though I'm a psychologist, I'm sharing it with you. And I hope you can keep it just between the two of us.
You know, I will, and I appreciate your vulnerability on that.
Well, I think this is a great topic. I know you and I both deal with leaders in our business in different ways. I was going to say in very different ways, but we probably end up dealing with them in similar ways. But maybe talk a little bit about, as somebody who, because you really play two roles. You are the leader of a band, you're the leader of your organization, but you're also, as part of what your organization does, you're interacting with leaders across all kinds of, in many cases, really large organizations. So maybe just talk about, for you, what does leadership actually mean? Because it's like the word we all throw out there, but how do you define it for yourself and in the people that you work with?
Leadership is a tough one because, we see people use that word a lot. And I think the first thing I'll say is that a lot of people mistake leadership and management. They conflate those two terms. And I think that's a big problem out in the industry, because you'll say, oh, that person is a great leader, or that person is a great manager. And people tend to use those terms interchangeably in a lot of cases. And I think they're two related but very different concepts. To me, and I don't remember where I heard this, but there was a great quote from someone at some point, and they said, leadership is all about convincing your troops to charge the hill and take the hill, right? And management is all about making sure they all survive when they're doing it, right? So they're two very different concepts. So I think leadership to me is a lot more about inspiring people. To go do things that maybe they didn't think they could do, or in some cases, maybe they don't even want to do. But you still have to sort of convince them to do it and show them that there's a bigger picture, that there's a vision behind all of this, that there is, there's some rhyme and reason to what we're doing, and be able to articulate that well and motivate people to go out and be the best people that they can be. Whereas management is really a lot of the, what I'll call the tactics, if you will, behind that, making sure that people are, adequately compensated, making sure that people are doing their jobs and making sure that they're doing them in the right way, or the way that you've defined within your organization. So to me, it's almost a split between sort of that inspiration and strategy and vision part of it as a leader, as opposed to more of the tactical stuff. And you need both, right? I've known great leaders who were terrible managers, and vice versa, right? I've known great managers that were just terrible. Mm-hmm. We can use sort of examples from different industries. Like you take a guy like Steve Jobs at Apple, great leader, visionary guy, convinced people to go do things that were just absolutely innovative at the time. But, probably not the guy you wanted looking after your supply chain or your logistics or whatever, or your manufacturing processes. That wasn't his core skill set. So he was a great leader, but I suspect at the end of the day, he probably wasn't a great manager. And then you see the flip side of that in a lot of cases. You see people that are great at the tactics. They're great at making sure people are taken care of, that they have what they need to do their job, so on and so forth. And that they're managing the budget. They're doing all those management related activities, but they're just not inspirational or visionary people. So I think that's maybe the most fundamental difference. And I think a lot of people conflate those terms, but I think they are two different concepts. They're almost flip sides of the same coin. You need to have both, but you don't necessarily have to have both in the same person. Ideally you do, but that's, I don't think that's necessarily a requirement.
So one of the things that I see a lot, particularly in corporate structures, is that people start in one position and they do their job. Usually it's a lower level position. They do their job, but very often it has to, you know, it's heavier on the management side, maybe, and a slightly lighter on the formal leadership side. And they keep getting promotions and they keep moving up. And when they move, quote, up, they're moving into increasingly leadership roles, but they're moving up into leadership roles by their success in management tactics. And so then you very often, at least I see people in very high levels of leadership who really don't have great leadership skills, but you can't fault them, if you will, for being there because they just did their job and they somehow found themselves in this position. And to be honest with you, and I don't know if you see this, I see a lot of people high up in leadership roles who kind of, when you get them behind, you know, closed doors, they'll tell you, I don't really like this. It's not that I hate my job, but I don't like the leadership, yeah. but I kind of had to in order to further my career. And so, you know, that conundrum we run into by the way that we structure our businesses, we reward people very often for benchmarks that are, like you said, more tactical or more tactical, more managerial. But then we raise you up to a position where what we need you to do is to lead and inspire, and nobody showed you how. And so, what are your thoughts about that? And how do you deal with that again? You know, in your own company, but also in not just your own company, but also in the companies that you work with.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? Because you're right. Most people go from being an individual contributor in their career. And then at some point, people say, wow, this person's doing a really great job. And they seem to have the management or leadership skills that are needed to go to the next level. They get promoted into management. And then they work their way up through the management chain into increasing levels of responsibility. And ideally in increasing levels of leadership. But you're right. A lot of times we see that transition from an individual contributor to a manager being very difficult for people to make. And then we also see that transition from being a manager into a leader, an even more difficult step to take. And I think you're right. But most companies don't do a very good job of preparing people for that, either of those transitions. I mean, some do, some don't. But I think what's interesting is something that you hit on there, which is that people get promoted to different levels of management based upon their competence at managing a team or managing a business or a business unit or whatever you call it, right? And so, I think companies tend to recruit people who have a strong operational background, strong management background, and they look at things like, well, how big of a team have you managed? And they try to use more measurable criteria for success. Whereas leadership is much more difficult to measure. So you can measure sort of managerial efficiency and efficacy fairly well, and there's lots of tools that you can use to do that. You can quantify a lot of it, but quantifying leadership is very difficult. And we've talked about this in past episodes, this idea that, well, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it philosophy. And I think that's this leadership is one of those things that's very, very difficult to measure. So it's very, very difficult to manage for a lot of organizations. And so I think, you know, one of the lessons learned over my career is that, you know, you have to figure, you have to have the balance, the right balance. And you can't just look at the objective data that says, well, this person, you know, they ran this organization and they turned a profit of so-and-so and they grew the business by such and such. Those things are great, but may not necessarily be attributable to the leadership capabilities of that person. I've seen situations where, you know, a company is just doing really well. They're in a hot market. They're there at the right time. They have the right products. Everything is growing. People are getting promoted, not necessarily because of their own individual characteristics, but because the company is growing and they've been there the longest, or they're the most experienced, or what have you. So I think that we need to have a much stronger emphasis on being able to understand leadership better, to measure leadership a little bit better, in order for us to manage it. And I think that's true in both the recruiting process when you're going out and hiring people, being able to understand really what kind of leader are they, particularly as they get into, you know, as you get higher and higher in the organization, the leadership skills matter more and more. But I think they matter at just about every level, because a leader doesn't necessarily have to be someone who is high up in the hierarchy, if you will.
Bingo.
You can have leaders everywhere. I say it like we only hire leaders at right. Adaptogen, for instance. And even our individual contributors can be leaders. They can lead initiatives. They can come up with ideas and drive them forward in a way that you don't want this top down. It comes from the CEO to the COO to whatever, the VPs all the way down. That kind of leadership, I think, is going out of style, and I think is largely gone out of style because those people at the top, they can't be the ones that have all the good ideas, right? I mean, they just aren't. They're not. I mean, very rarely will you see a situation like that. So you need leadership, and you need innovation coming from every part of your business. And so I think the real key is making sure that, you know, you hire the right people that have the potential to become leaders. You move them through the process and encourage them to be leaders at every level. And as they move up in the hierarchy, so to speak, I think those leadership skills have to be nurtured. They have to be, you have to learn things along the way. And sometimes you learn things the hard way through trial and error, and you say, wow, that wasn't a very good leadership move. So you gain that experience over time. But I think we need to put a much greater emphasis on it at all levels of the organization, as well as when we hire or promote people into new levels. That needs to be a very strong criterion that we use that I think a lot of companies don't necessarily use today.
So one of the things that I see a lot is founders of organizations who, by definition, you know, it's theirs. They started it, at least. And so at some point they were leading, they had to, and maybe they grew the organization, and they get to this point where either they recognize, I've seen it both ways, either they recognize either explicitly or maybe kind of just internally that they're not a great leader. And then they have, but they have people around them who really are great leaders. And then you run into this title bureaucracy conflict. And I guess, so my question is, is the ultimate leader the one who can say, I'm not as good of a leader as the people, as someone on my team? And as a result, I'm going to not step down, quit my job, but I'm going to redefine my role, because now I am surrounded by individuals who are maybe better at this than I am. And like I was saying earlier, maybe they like it more than I do. I mean, it's a rare situation that I see, but in terms of a leader actually doing that, very often they're forced to step down, or they're pushed, or they're nudged, or, you know, the VC comes in and we're replacing you. But do you see that when you go into organizations, sort of the decision makers who really are able to say, well, I'm a decision maker, but I'm going to defer to somebody else?
Oh yeah, I think it happens a lot. It probably happens a lot more often than people think. And I think part of the reason for that is that those leaders who maybe aren't the best leaders and are going to defer to someone on their team, a lot of times they do that very quietly. they don't come out and say that. And I think there's a couple of different kinds of leadership, right? You can use leadership in the sense of being a leader of an organization or a group of people. And I think that's traditionally what people think of when they think of leadership. But I think there's also this idea of being a thought leader, someone who leads by looking at the strategy, saying here are the course corrections we need to make. Here are the new initiatives we need to be going after, and be able to generate the enthusiasm and the support for those initiatives within an organization. And we've seen a lot more of that, I think, over the last, say, 10 or 15 years, this idea of being a thought leader. And people will even, you know, I talk to a lot of customers, and the vice president or the C-level executive will get on the phone, and they'll say things like, and they will actually say it very explicitly, you know, here is, you know, Joe or Mary or whomever, and they're my thought leader in this area. Yeah. So they're not necessarily the leader. They're not the leader in terms of, you know, where they sit in the hierarchy or how many people they have reporting to them or whatever. They're thought leaders in a specific area. And those executives, those higher level executives, will defer to them because they have a much greater level of expertise in those areas and can drive forward initiatives and build that enthusiasm, set the vision, and build the support for doing new things within an organization. So I think you see a bit of both, right? Most of the time, I think people kind of do it tacitly, but sometimes you will see with regard to thought leaders, you'll see it called out very explicitly within organizations, and people within the organization, as well as people outside of the organization, will know that person is the thought leader for me in a particular area.
No, I really like that, because if you think about an organization that is made up of super smart people at any level, right? Again, it's bureaucratic in terms of a hierarchy, whether it's a smaller company or a larger company. But if you're a leader and you can say, when I look out across my organization at any level, that level of rank or title doesn't matter, I have, I want to say SME, subject matter experts or thought leaders all over my company, and being able to sort of pull those people up. And again, I see it in larger organizations, you know, the person who's maybe a director or a manager just by title, or even just, maybe they don't even have a title yet. You know, they're even below that. And they're super knowledgeable about something. It takes a lot of not just guts, but I was going to say, you know, if you're leading an organization, either relying on or paying attention to the contributions that your people are making, who you may not even know, right? Who are, again, if you're in an organization that's large, who are so far removed, but they're a rock star in their area. The reason I say this, Alex, and I know you work with these large organizations, I see this with some of the utility companies I work with. You know, you've got multiple layers, and you've got managers and directors and EVPs and SVPs and VPs and all that kind of stuff. But then you've got people out on the front lines, the foremen or four people. And they may be the most knowledgeable about innovation around, let's say, power delivery. And they may or may not ever get a chance to rise up, not in rank, but in thought. I mean, how do you craft an organization so that it's what you just said, at Adaptigent, you hire all leaders, but how do you craft an organization so that the leader honors anybody who's got a great idea? Because that's easy to say, right? Any idea, not, what is it? No idea is a bad idea or whatever, right? It isn't, you know, yeah, right. I mean, yes, that's true. But yes. How do you make that happen so that there is some equality there, but then also organization to the organization?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, you know, a lot of times you'll have people that are thought leaders, And but what they will lack is the authority to do anything about the, the ideas that they have. And that can be very frustrating, right? I've had that happen to me in my own career where I thought, God, you guys are idiots. This is the best idea that we've ever had. And you're just sitting on it. What are you doing? And so, yeah, so I think that that there's always going to be that frustration, or there's always going to be that friction between, you know, thought leaders who are looking at it from a visionary new idea, next generation, whatever you want to call it, standpoint. And then there's the realities of the business, the more managerial operational realities of the business. And let's face it, I mean, every business has constraints. I don't care how profitable a company is, how well they're doing. Pretty much every business out there has constraints. And, you know, I remember a mentor of mine back earlier in my career, I was complaining about, well, I need, you know, $2 million to go do this initiative. And I was really frustrated about it. And he sat me down and said, look, man, anybody can manage a business with no constraints. And that's easy, right? I mean, think about it. Well, if you have no constraints, managing a business, leading, all that stuff is really, really easy if you have an infinite supply of money and time and people and whatever. And so that was a really good lesson for me very early in my career. He didn't say, you know, hey, shut up and stop complaining about the fact that you're not going to get this money to do this thing. I think it's a great idea. So it's just happened down. So I think it's a great idea too. But you have to manage within the constraints that you've been given in the business. And sometimes those are financial constraints. Sometimes those are regulatory constraints. Sometimes those are just number of people constraints and skill set constraints. So you have to look at it from that perspective. And I think the best leaders out there are the ones that can figure out how to get things done and how to motivate people in light of those constraints, because again, everybody has them. You can't pretend like they don't exist. So I think that friction will always exist. I think one of the ways of dealing with it is to have those candid conversations about, look, it's a great idea, or that this is, you're right, we should be going in that direction, but here are the constraints that we have within the business that may limit what we can do there. So you've got to at least temper your enthusiasm to understand that you have to deal with those constraints. So I think that's one aspect of it, is just making sure that you've got that open and honest communication. I think the second piece to it is really about building a culture of openness and honesty and transparency. And that's really what we try to push at Adaptogen, is a culture that values ideas and values the people that come up with ideas. In fact, we've created metrics around that actually measure how many ideas are we bringing to the table every quarter. And they could be small ideas, they could be little, you know, areas of improvement, or they could be big ideas like a brand new product or a brand new go-to-market strategy. So building a culture that values ideas over valuing the structural integrity of the hierarchy, if you will, I think is one way you can do that, and making it clear that to everybody that, you know, this is an open forum for ideas. At the end of the day, someone has to make a decision about what we're going to do, where we're going to place our bets, so on and so forth. But I found that when you get people on board with it and you make them part of the conversation about leadership, and about where the direction we're going and the strategy we're going, even if you go in a direction that they don't agree with, they tend to get on board with it as long as you can communicate why and here's what we're doing. So I think that friction can be very healthy, because it generates ideas, it generates ways of doing things that can maybe get around some of those constraints. But if you don't ever have those conversations and you don't ever have those debates, or you only have those debates in the executive boardroom, then I think you have a much more difficult time getting people to actually execute on those ideas. If people don't believe in something, or they don't believe that they were part of the decision-making process, so on and so forth, then they tend to be less willing to give it their all and get behind it. So I think one of the characteristics of a leader, a great leader, is when you make a decision that may not be popular, one of those characteristics, or maybe it doesn't go with what other people are thinking, is to really be able to have that open and honest conversation and explain, here's why we're doing this. And I get that you think we should be going in this direction or what have you, but the reason we're going in another direction is this. I've heard everyone's input into this process. I value everyone's input into the process. But at the end of the day, we have to make the decision. Do we go left? Do we go right? And I think a lot of companies don't do that well. Or they will sit there and ponder the decision forever and they never make a decision. And that's the worst, is when you see that happening, where people just can't seem to get off the dime and make a decision. We're either going to go left or we're going to go right. Because at the end of the day, we're, you know, in any company with the pace of change that's happening these days, and this is why we rebranded our company to the, you know, brand Adaptigent, because you have to adapt and you have to adapt quickly, which means you have to make decisions probably far more quickly than you had to in the past. And so great leaders, I think, take all that input and then they make decisive decisions and say, look, here's the direction we're going. Here's why we're doing it. I know some people don't agree with it, but having that openness and candor about what's happening and why we're doing things, I think that's a characteristic of a great leader.
All right, I'm going to pivot as we come to the end of this. I have a question for you. Who is the leader of the Eagles? And granted, God rest his soul, Glenn Frey is no longer with us. Who's the leader of the Eagles?
Well, yeah, and I think that one, when we've talked a little bit about this in past episodes, you know, when you look at bands, I would say the majority of them are what we call self-managing teams. And I think what it really points out to us is that there are different leadership styles are needed within different organizations, different types of companies or organizations. Some of them require a different leadership style than others. And then I think there's also this idea that leadership characteristics and styles can vary even by department or by sub-department within organizations. So I don't think that there's a one-size-fits-all leadership model for every circumstance. It really depends on the organization that you're in, the culture of that organization, and what the organization is actually trying to do. So for instance, you know, you might have one leadership style for a company that is, or an organization that's really, you know, done well, and they're focused on sort of maintaining where they're at in the marketplace. They're not looking to necessarily grow 40% a year. They're quite happy with where they're at. I think that's one leadership style. Then there's the leadership style for a startup, right? It's just coming up and just trying to get things off the ground. I think you need maybe a little bit different leadership style in that particular context. Now, I think there are leadership characteristics that cut across all of those different styles of leadership. There's sort of those baseline characteristics that I think you need as a leader. But too many times I see people have this idea that leadership is a one-size-fits-all type of mentality. And so you get into it, you can get into a lot of trouble with that. So for instance, managing and leading a software development team, there are things that motivate those types of people that are very difficult, different than, say, motivating a sales team and leading a sales team.
You mean like Mountain Dew for the developers?
Yeah, exactly. You got to supply them with a lot of caffeine. You really have to listen to what they're telling you because they're experts, right? Yep. Most of the people there are legit experts in what they do. And you as the leader may not have the level of expertise they have. Most of them tend to be introverts, you know, so there's different personality characteristics, different organizational characteristics that you have to look at. Whereas if you look at a sales teams are motivated by very, very different things, right? There's the old saying that, you know, salespeople are coin operated or whatever. And I don't think that's entirely true, but there is a lot of truth to that generalization when you look at it. So being able to lead, you might be a great leader for, let's say, a development organization, but a terrible leader when it comes to leading a sales team or a marketing team or an operations or finance team, all very different types of people, different personalities, different organizational characteristics. So I think you have to adapt your leadership style to the context that you're in. And if you don't do that, you're making assumptions about what motivates people, how to lead people, how to drive them forward that just don't work in another context. And I think we've seen that happen time and again throughout corporate history. You'll take someone, they'll get appointed to be the CEO of a company, and it's just a train wreck. And that's because they came from a different world. They came from a different type of culture, and they just didn't adapt their leadership styles. And then on the other hand, you have people that can cross industries, cross different types of businesses and lead very, very effectively in an entirely new context. And the guy that comes to mind in that is Lou Gerstner, who took over IBM back in the 90s. And the old joke about Lou Gerstner, well, there were a couple of jokes about him, but one of them was that he had been a senior executive at Nabisco. I think he was the CEO of Nabisco, or one of those types of companies, basically a food company, and then took over as CEO of IBM. And the joke was, well, he went from potato chips to microchips. But he made the transition really well. I mean, IBM was incredibly successful under his leadership. So you see people that have trouble taking their leadership style and adapting it to the context that they're in, but then other people seem to have a tremendous ability to take the leadership principles, adapt them to the conditions that they're in, and drive a company or an organization towards success. And I think that also great leadership characteristic, if you can do it, if you can be a great leader in one industry or one context, that's good. If you can do it across industries and across different contexts, that tells me you've probably got a great leader.
Okay. So my takeaway on this one is, and it's what nobody wants to hear, but it's what I'm passionate about. I know you have a great interest in, and that is we have to pay more attention to the human aspect of these people that we ask to run organizations. And that while it may feel easier to look at tactical benchmarks and revenue, we've just spent an entire segment talking about human characteristics, and that the great companies are the ones that invest in understanding those, fostering those, and making hard decisions about it. I'm going to leave you with this. You don't have to answer. This is for our listeners. Who was a better leader of Van Halen, David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar? I'm just ponder it. Just think about it.
That will create controversy, to be certain, right? I'm not going to opine on that one, but yes, I think that is a great takeaway for our listeners. We'd love to get your feedback on that one, because I think the answers will be both interesting as well as I think they'll be very heartfelt.
That's great. Okay, well, we've run out of time. That's another wrap on a great segment of Adapt or Perish. Stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, because that's where you're going to hear the next episode with Dr. Alex Hubline and myself, Dr. Josh Klapo, of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.